WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Let's talk about an iconic Southwest Side landmark that's on its way out. It's demolition time for the Damon Silos. You know, those large structures that you may have passed on the expressway? Crews have begun the work. Preservationists and community groups, well, they've been fighting for years to save the old grain elevators. They say tearing them down means ripping away an important chapter of Chicago history. The Damon Silos date back to 1906 and were abandoned decades later in 1977. Now, some are hoping to turn them into a park or maybe a concert venue, but those options for now seem off the table. Meanwhile, the city's Department of Buildings calls this, quote, environmentally complex, with concerns of dust, air quality, and water preservation. So we're going to take a step back and dig into the role that the silos played in early 20th century Chicago, and then we'll fast forward to today, how to keep the McKinley Park neighborhood safe during the demolition, and what lies ahead for the site. Here to fill us in was Robert Lorzel, freelance journalist for WBEZ. You can read his most recent piece on the Damon Silos at WBEZ.org. And Kate Eakin, managing director of McKinley Park Development Council. Kate began by describing the Damon Silos for people who haven't seen them.
The Damon Silos are massive structures located at the river on Damon Avenue. The site is 23 acres and it includes five buildings. Two massive silo structures, which are many, many stories tall, that formerly held large quantities of grain and other commodities. There's also a red brick building that was used for shuttling certain things on and off the water in the Santa Fe Slip. And then there were two additional metal buildings at the site used for varying types of storage.
And how close in proximity are these structures to the residential neighborhoods?
The silos are geographically close to residential, about three blocks, but very, very separated. They are separated by the Stevenson Expressway, by Damon Avenue, by the river itself, and also by a wall of industrial development and rail.
These are old grain elevators, Robert. Tell us more. What is a grain elevator and how does it work exactly?
Well, they go back way before 1906. This was kind of in the middle period of the history of the grain elevators. So if you go back before the Civil War in the 1840s, 1850s, these big structures were built that allowed vast quantities of grain to be brought into Chicago by boat or train, mm-hmm. and then it would be sucked up into these tall structures using conveyor belts with scoops on them. And the corn and the wheat and the other crops would be stored in these buildings, and then they'd use the force of gravity to dump it out of the silo into a different ship or a different train to mm-hmm. take it on to its destination in New York or Cleveland or wherever.
A pretty seamless system it was, right?
Yes, yes.
Talk more about that period. You brought us way back. Let's talk about Chicago being used, as I alluded to earlier, as this hub for agricultural trade.
Yeah, and a lot of people who are really into Chicago history talk about the William Cronin book, Nature's Metropolis, which came out in 1991. And it's really one of the essential books in Chicago history. And it shows how Chicago was the center point in the middle of the country because of where we are located along the Great Lakes, mm-hmm. the Mississippi River system, and then the rail lines that came in. We really became the funnel point where And this is true also for the stockyards. The reason why we had the Union stockyards here was because cattle and pigs were being brought in from all over the country to be slaughtered here and then the meat to be distributed outwards. And with grain, it was the same kind of thing. Chicago was just the natural spot where it made sense to bring all this stuff in and to sort it out. That was the genius of the system, was that they could, in the very old days, you would have to buy your grain from a specific farmer.
Yeah.
And you'd be haggling with that farmer over his bags of corn, and you wouldn't know exactly what his quality of corn was. But they developed the system where all the corn that's a certain quality will get dumped into this one big grain elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want 1 million bushels or 10 bushels or whatever, you just get it from that
source. You get it all from that same place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you described, too, and just sort of how everything's connected, it sounds like this really helped build Chicago up as an economic powerhouse.
Yeah, yeah. And it also leads into the Board of Trade and Finance, because this whole system allowed people to basically sort of speculate or place wagers on what is the price of corn going to be in the fall, and I'm going to bet that people will buy it for $40 or whatever, which creates modern finance.
Yeah. So, Kate, talk more about that colorful history and connect it to your feelings now, right? If we're hearing all of this connectedness with the silos, I mean, how does that lend to your feelings to the fact that they're disappearing?
I mean, we're obviously really disappointed with this outcome, right? Neighbors have been very invested in preserving the silos and also in taking having some control over our own future for what comes on this site next.
Talk more about that, because I feel like that's the root of things, the not having a say.
It really is. It really is. There's been, because there's so many gaps in the process and there have been so many different agencies who have touched this process, and some of them have capacity for public comment and others don't. And there's also been a lot of gaps in jurisdiction where the city didn't understand how the state process works, or the state didn't notify the city of certain things that were happening. Mm. And so there's a lot of factors like that that contributed to where we ended up. And there are also a lot of opportunities where something different could have happened if those procedures had been followed and if everyone understood how they worked.
Yeah, there was, when I think back, there were once well over 100 of these grain elevators in Chicago. And now this is like one of the last.
It is. It is. Although it's certainly not the last. This one is also not short on scandal, previous scandal. To answer your previous question.
Sure, yeah.
So my husband's a historian and he's done a lot of digging on this site. And one of the things he came up with was in the 20s, this was operated by Armour Grain Company, which is not the same as Armour Foods that today makes packed meat, but it was the same family.
Okay.
And they were involved in a scandal where they mixed bad rye with good rye, and they moved the market price in doing so. And then they didn't actually sell it, but again, they moved the market, right? So the Chicago Board of Trade came in and said, they investigated, and they found them to be at fault, that they should not have done that, mm-hmm. and they didn't do anything about it. Well, days later, the feds got word of this and actually came in and threatened to shut down the Chicago Board of Trade.
Oh, wow.
Right. So, you know, there has been a long history of all kinds of things happening on this site that have really affected the city in so many ways.
Good and bad.
Yes.
And as I recall with that story, they had they were supposed to have books for the Damon silos that would keep track of what grain is stored there. And those books suddenly went missing.
Hmm. I wonder what happened.
The other years were there, just the ones that applied.
Yeah, yeah. So good spot for you to tell us your reaction, Robert, to what's happening. Is this an inevitable change, what we're seeing right now, or are we truly losing a piece of history here?
Well, yes, we are losing a piece of history. I mean, you can debate whether an obsolete structure. I mean, no one is saying that they're going to rejuvenate the Damon silos and turn it into a grain elevator again.
Right.
So it really no longer serves its original purpose. So then when you have a large structure like that, that no longer serves its purpose, what do you do with it? And there are places, if you go to the River District in Minneapolis, it's a beautiful part of the town. That's where tourists love to go. And in that stretch, it's right where the Mississippi River is kind of on the north end of the river, where it's a fairly small river at that point. And they've got an old grain elevator. It's empty, but they restored the building. They made it look nice. And it's part of this, basically, an urban park.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other places where grain elevators have been turned into hotels or art museums. It's not easy to do. These are big structures without windows. So I could see it would be very challenging to find a new use for it. But just demolishing it erases it from the skyline, and there's really not going to be much left of it at that point.
And there's a variety of potential uses, right? Refitting them, obviously turning something into housing or a hotel is an incredibly expensive project that requires standards for human occupancy. And that's one kind of project. But there's also projects where they've been turned into a climbing gym. You know,
wow.
A climbing gym or public art. In Buenos Aires, a city with far fewer resources than Chicago, they invited artist Barbara Kruger to come in and paint their silos. And it forms the backdrop for their river walk for a strip of bars and restaurants. It's incredibly popular. And then a couple years after that, they became the subject of an international architecture competition to shore them up and figure out what's next. And certainly that is the kind of thing I think Chicago could do.
So, Kate, as we talked about earlier, neighbors, they've been outspoken. They want input, right? And both about preserving the silos, but also about the environmental concerns here. So I want to play a little bit of what some other folks had to say at a community meeting about the demolition. This was back in 2023.
I'm a born and bred Southwest Sider. There's no other part of the city that I would ever live in. But I have to say, damn it, we deserve nice things on the Southwest Side. Like, this is not what we deserve.
Everyone in our community is aware that this is already a very heavily overpolluted area, and we are all suffering from increased health risk because of that, and we have been for our whole lives.
Our neighborhood has lost so many beautiful industrial buildings. I mean, Chicago was a centerpiece of the Industrial Revolution. And we can honor that through our history and our heritage. And yet we just rip this stuff down like it's a dime a dozen. You know, like cities in the Sun Belt would kill for this type of stuff because it's cool. It has a sense of place. It doesn't look like, you know, an interstate exit in Bolingbrook, which is probably what we're going to get on this site.
You're quite tickled by some of these.
I recognize most
voices.
Of those voices.
Right. So just drive home for us what's gained from a process like this, public input.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important to have the public input. And so that's one of the things that didn't happen is that when the state sold this building, sold this property, there was no venue for public input. And that's really different than when other agencies sell property. The state's process was literally highest bidder, cash and carry. There was no qualitative analysis of what was going to come next on the site. There was no public comment for what would have been in what neighbors wanted. And that matters a lot because the areas where we have gotten concessions have been from places where there was the opportunity for public comment. And I'd also like to take a step back and say that, you know, when we've dealt with the sale of city property, there is a process like that. Mm-hmm. And so we've had great success with getting
this
things
work before.
Yeah, we've had success with getting things we want into our neighborhood by interacting with those processes. And, you know, the outcome is still the same, that the agency sells the property and they make some money on it and then they move on. Right. So I do think it's really, really important. And so I do want to take a minute to acknowledge that in the course of this process, the primary agency that did have public comment that got concessions for neighbors was the Army Corps of Engineers and their process for the federal permit. And out of that, we didn't get everything that we wanted. It's still not designed to stop demolition, but there were concessions that will require, for example, the preservation of certain elements on the property, which mm-hmm. will be incorporated into a future river walk, as well as interpretive panels and the dock itself.
Just to underscore just the iconic nature of things here, Robert, the Damon silos, as you write in your piece, they were in several movies.
Yeah, I mean, and they're also something that became like a real target for graffiti artists. Canvas.
Art
for,
projects.
I think target is strong. Canvas.
Canvas, yeah, canvas. a lot of urban explorers loved going in there and sort of... I mean, they're trespassing, so I'm not condoning that, but you could see that people were drawn to the image of these buildings and wanting to explore them. There was a music video film there just recently, which I mentioned in my most recent story. So that was still going on just several months ago.
Mm-hmm. You just talked about some of the ways in which, you know, the silo, that site could be repurposed. The owner, as far as I know, has not said anything about what it will become, Kate. So, I mean, what does that tell you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Over 1,000 neighbors signed a petition to turn this property into a park and festival grounds.
Right.
That was a deal that we actually brought to the owner, and there was money behind it to actually make it happen. That was not a pipe dream. But he has chosen not to sell
at
any price.
Does it seem at all that he's open to community input on what it could be?
He says that he is, but he hasn't come to a single public meeting.
Interesting. So your organization then, the McKinley Park Development Council, I mean, you're focusing on this community-driven input, community-driven development. You have a plan to develop from Western Avenue to Chinatown.
That's
what can
correct.
You share about that?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, last summer, we published a plan that was funded by Chicago Community Trust for a public bicycle and pedestrian path along the Chicago River on the South Branch from Western Avenue to Pink Tom Park in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can take a look at those plans. They're on our website at mpdcchicago.org. And the basic gist of it is we also have to deal with a lot of traffic safety issues in our neighborhood. And because we are surrounded by water on two sides and state highways on all four, you can only leave the neighborhood on a bridge. Those bridges are on major streets that are not safe for walking and cycling, including specifically Archer Avenue. And so if we were going to build parallel infrastructure, separate infrastructure for cyclist and pedestrian, which is an economic development issue and a transportation issue, then they have to go somewhere else. And the logical place to put that is on the riverfront.
Right.
So our plan would link several existing sections of path that are in mostly Chicago Park District property, but also some existing Riverwalk sections on private property. And that will eventually include the Damon silos, because when any future construction happens on this site, the owner will be required to provide a minimum 30 feet of public space with a 10-foot bicycle and pedestrian path. That's a city ordinance that's been in place since 2019.
And so as we talk about safety, there's a safety plan when it comes to this demolition?
I was just speaking about traffic safety, about providing safe places for pedestrians and cyclists. As far as the demolition itself, we do have concerns about safety. That would be a separate topic.
Yeah. So tell us what those concerns are.
Yeah. So the city has instituted this complex demolition process. It came into place after the Hilco disaster several years ago. And while there's no longer explosives allowed for demolition, so we're not probably talking about the giant dust cloud that encompassed Little Village, there are still remaining concerns about what goes in the river.
Yeah.
And that's one of our biggest concerns with demolition, because there's a jurisdiction gap where the city public health department and Department of Buildings have plans, for example, making sure no one gets hurt while working on the site, or for making sure that dust is controlled. But what happens if something ends up in the river is actually a little bit of a gray area.
Yeah.
And essentially the plan is, after something happens, we'll call the Army Corps of Engineers. And so we would have preferred a little bit more proactive plan.
Of course. Yeah. Talk more, Robert, about just the overall challenges of redeveloping such a site.
Well, I was out there last Thursday morning, and this was when the smaller buildings were already torn down, but the silos hadn't really started working on those yet. And you know, just like walking around that site, I took the CTA trains there and walked up Archer and up Damon. And, you know, at that spot, Damon is a big overpass to go over the water there. So if you're looking at the silos, you're way up on a bridge.
Yeah.
And then if I wanted to, I decided to walk over to the Canalport Riverwalk Park, which is the park right nearby. But to get to that, I have to walk down this ramp, with trucks coming up the ramp, and there's no sidewalk on it. So I kind of felt like I was taking my life in my own hands just walking around the site, and I'm sure, Kate, you're probably familiar with it. It's not exactly an inviting...
I wrote it on my way here, so thank you for pointing out the issues in our bike ped infrastructure.
Yeah, and to your point earlier there, if things do go into the water, the Chicago Department of Public Health says it will be ready to stop demolition if material goes into the water, and it'll be ready to issue tickets if necessary.
And of course,
you're satisfied with that?
I mean, that's a reactionary plan. We'd like to see something a little more proactive. They are going to be setting up like bumpers. They're kind of like the bumpers in a bowling alley around the edge of the site to retain the water and catch some of those things. But we are, of course, concerned about long-term runoff. And that is why our friends at Urban Rivers have offered to do water testing throughout the demolition to make sure there's somebody is keeping an eye out for what might potentially run off, because there's also a lot of tunnels under the site. Yeah. And so there's more than one way for things to end
up
in the water.
There's so much to consider. Yeah. Thanks for being here. Kate Eakin, Managing Director, McKinley Park Development Council, and Robert Lorzel, who's a freelance journalist. And you can read his most recent piece on all of this with regards to the Damon silos. It's up online at WBEZ.org. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Linnea Dominic. Now, we often dig into Chicago's rich architectural history on this show, so check out our archive at wbez.org/reset to learn the stories of more fascinating buildings. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.